Well, it is great to be with you. I'm so excited. When I got here, I thought the first thing I had to do is just walk out on the beach. And I took some time and I was just walking and I saw these little sandpipers, and they're just so hilarious because they're just so little and they run so fast, and then they jump and they fly and all kinds of things. And it reminded me of the story of a friend of mine who was having surgery, and she was really nervous about it. And so she went to her surgeon. They were having sort of a pre-op appointment, and she was so anxious. She went out to the beach in Southern California, where I live, and she had gone out early in the morning to just kind of be in creation and see what she could see. And she got out there and she just saw covered on the beach were all these sand dollars. She's like, just hundreds of sand dollars. And so she grabbed a whole bunch of them, and she thought when she goes in for her pre-op, she'll take one to her surgeon and say, you know, this is a good gesture, I'm giving you this sand dollar. And I'm keeping one and really do a good job. And her surgeon looked at it and he said, Where did you get this? And she said, well, I got it on the beach. And she said, he said, who made it? Where is this from? Who made it? And she's like, what do you mean, who made it? Like, and it just struck me that, oh my goodness, could it be possible that someone could look at a sand dollar and wonder who made it? And as I thought, isn't it something that we know? We know the God who made it. We know the God who made the sand dollar. We know the God who made the sandpipers. And here we are getting to spend this weekend just right on the ocean. So I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to open up for you some stories in the Bible. I was raised in a family where we had a huge Bible. It was probably about this thick, and it was white, and it was really special because it had gold leaf on all of the edges, and it had like these like amazing like Renaissance type pictures, artwork in it, and it was like right there in the center of our family. And I mean, nobody ever read it, but it was special, right? You knew, like, so evocative, like what could be in this Bible. And that Bible has been calling me, I think, my whole life, and I've always wondered, what is in this book? What are the stories? Who are the characters, and who is this God? And so what we're going to do this weekend is I'm going to take probably four or five stories in the Bible, and I'm going to tell them to you, and I'm going to invite you into the stories with me. And what that means is we're going to sort of put ourselves in and pretend what it would be like if we were actually in the story. And we're going to see these people as real human beings who were real and had feelings and thoughts and fears just like we do. And I'm hoping that as we do that, we're going to learn something about God and something about ourselves and something about the stories, and hopefully something about each other. Because God is a God of relationship. There's one thing that's true. God is a God of relationship. So relationship with God, relationship with other people, and relationship with ourselves. And we know that because of the Trinity. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, all in relationship with one another. So as we read the stories in the Bible with the rubric or understanding of relationship, it really opens up. Stories for us. So that's what we're going to do, is we're going to look at stories. And stories are sort of my passion, because I not only love the stories in the Bible, but I love the stories of people. And as Dan told you, I've been sitting with people for a long time, and one of the things I love is getting to know the stories of people, because it's in the stories that we see where God is moving and what he's doing in people's lives. So, I'd like you just to consider this weekend into these stories as an invitation to see what maybe is God inviting you to. You know, is this a weekend where you are wanting some time to be with God? Is this a weekend where you're wanting some time to be thinking about what's happening in your own life? Is this a weekend when you're wanting to, like, be with other people and find out about others? And it will be all three of those things, because you can't really separate them out. And I hope it will be a way to grow in all of those. All right, so the key, I think, to unlocking these biblical stories is by seeing them as stories. Stories with a plot, stories sometimes with a beginning and a middle, and maybe an unresolved end, and characters, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that. All right, looking at biblical stories and modern stories, they bring humanity to us, and they bring each other and the realness of who we are in human beings. So I wanted to look at these stories and God's engagement with stories as an invitation into abundance. We live in a world that is all about scarcity. It's like there's not enough, or we're worried, or we're anxious that there won't be enough. But as we look at these stories, we're going to see that God is inviting us into abundance and into more. And so we'll see that. All right. I wanted to look at love and distress, and I was a little worried because I thought nobody's going to want to come to a treat about distress. So I thought, well, we have to start with love. But I do want to say that if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of times we will find ourselves in distress of some sort or another. And it's in those places that God is with us. So let's jump in. And the first story that we're going to read, I'm going to read several portions of several chapters to you. And this is, we're going to jump into Sarah and Hagar. This is in Genesis. And I'm going to read it to you from the Message. And I will read parts, so you might have to just skip along with me. And as you listen, I just want to ask you to listen with empathy. So empathy is when you're trying to see it from someone else's point of view, trying to put yourself in someone else's point of view. So you're not necessarily seeing if you agree or disagree. It's more like, can you try and understand what it might be like to be them? Okay, so, yeah. All right, so I'm starting in Genesis 15. After all these things, this word of God came to Abram in a vision. Don't be afraid, Abram. I'm your shield. Your reward will be grand. Abram said, God, Master, what use are your gifts as long as I'm childless? And Eliezer of Damascus is going to inherit everything. Abram continued, see, you've given me no children, and now a mere house servant is going to get it all. Then God's message came. Don't worry. He won't be your heir. A son from your body will be your heir. Then he took him outside and said, look at the sky. Count the stars. Can you do it? Count your descendants. You're going to have a big family, Abram. And he believed God. God declared him set right with God. God continued, I'm the same God who brought you from Ur of the Chaldees and gave you this land to own. Then in Genesis 16, Sarai, Abram's wife, hadn't yet produced a child. She had an Egyptian maid named Hagar. Sarai said to Abram, God has not seen fit to let me have a child. Sleep with my maid. Maybe I can get a family from her. Abram agreed to do what Sarai said. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took her Egyptian maid, Hagar, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as a wife. Abram had been living 10 years in Canaan when this took place. He slept with Hagar, and she got pregnant. When Hagar learned she was pregnant, she looked down on her mistress. Sarai told Abram, "It's all your fault that I'm suffering this abuse. I put my maid in bed with you, and the minute she knows she's pregnant, she treats me like I'm nothing. May God decide which of us is right." "You decide," said Abram. "Your maid is your business." Sarai was abusive to Hagar, and Hagar ran away. An angel of God found her beside a spring in the desert. It was the spring on the road to Shur. He said, "Hagar, maid of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I'm running away from Sarai, my mistress." The angel of God said, "Go back to your mistress, put up with her abuse." He continued, "I'm going to give you a big family, children, past counting. From this pregnancy, you'll get a son. Name him Ishmael, for God heard you. God answered you. He'll be a bucking bronco of a man, a real fighter, fighting and being fought, always stirring up trouble, always at odds with his family." She answered God by name, praying to the God who spoke to her. "You're the God who sees me. Yes, he saw me, and then I saw him." Now I'm skipping to the middle of Genesis 17. God continued speaking to Abraham, "And Sarai, your wife, don't call her Sarai any longer. Call her Sarah. I'll bless her. Yes, I'll give you a son by her. Oh, how I'll bless her. Nations will come from her. Kings of nations will come from her." Abraham fell flat on his face, and then he laughed, thinking, "Can a 100-year-old man father a son? And can Sarah at 90 years have a baby?" Recovering, Abram said to God, "Oh, keep Ishmael alive and well before you." But God said, "That's not what I mean. Your wife Sarah will have a baby, a son. Name him Isaac," which means laughter. "I'll establish my covenant with him and his descendants, a covenant that lasts forever. And Ishmael, yes, I heard your prayer for him. I'll also bless him. I'll make sure he has plenty of children, a huge family. He'll father 12 princes. I'll make him a great nation. But I'll establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah will give you about this time next year." Now I'm jumping over to Genesis 21. God visited Sarah exactly as he said he would. God did to Sarah what he promised. Sarah became pregnant and gave Abraham a son in his old age. And at the very time God had set, Abraham named him Isaac. When his son was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him just as God had commanded. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born. Sarah said, "God has blessed me with laughter, and all who get the news will laugh with me." She also said, "Whoever would have suggested to Abraham that Sarah would one day nurse a baby? Yet here I am. I've given the old man a son." The baby grew and was weaned. Abraham threw a big party on the day Isaac was weaned. One day, Sarah saw the son that Hagar, the Egyptian, had borne to Abraham poking fun at her son Isaac. She told Abraham, "Get rid of this slave woman and her son. No child of this slave is going to share an inheritance with my son Isaac." The matter gave great pain to Abraham. After all, Ishmael was his son. But God spoke to Abraham, "Don't feel badly about the boy and your maid. Do whatever Sarah tells you. Your descendants will come through Isaac. Regarding your maid son, be assured that I'll also develop a great nation from him. He's your son too." Abraham got up early the next morning, got some food together and a canteen of water for Hagar, put them on her back and sent her away with the child. She wandered off into the desert of Beersheba. When the water was gone, she left the child under a shrub and went off 50 yards or so. She said, "I can't watch my son die. And she sat, as she sat, she broke into sobs. Meanwhile, God heard the boy crying. The angel of God called from heaven to Hagar. "What's wrong, Hagar?" "Don't be afraid. God has heard the boy and knows the fix he's in. Up now, go get the boy, hold him tight. I'm going to make of him a great nation." Just then God opened her eyes. She looked, she saw a well of water. She went to it and filled her canteen and gave the boy a long, cool drink. God was on the boy's side as he grew up. Quite a story. Did you know that was in the Bible? I want to just start out by saying there is a promise that God gave. So God gave Abraham a promise. What was the promise? Anybody? Say it again.
Many descendants.
Yes, I'm going to give you many descendants. What does Abraham say? Funny thing, because my wife can't have children, so I don't know what your plan is. And God kept reinforcing the promise. So God made an unbelievable promise. But the thing that's amazing is Abraham actually believed him. That's something really special about Abraham, is that he was a man of faith, that he believed the unbelievable. So God made an unbelievable promise, and Abram believed. But this story gets a little deeper, right? As we're going into this story, 10 years go by, and what happens? Pretty much nothing. Sarah is still saying, "I'm still not pregnant. I'm getting older. Now I'm 10 years older, still not pregnant. Still have this promise." And so Sarah does what she thinks is a really great idea. She says, "Well, clearly God didn't mean that the child was going to come from me, so I'll give you my maid. I'll give you Hagar." Hagar was Egyptian, and she was Sarah's maid. So how well do you think this is going to go as you're reading it? Can you feel the tension going, like, who thought this was a good idea? So Hagar goes in to sleep with Abraham, and she gets pregnant right away. Okay, so now what are the dynamics? Now you have Sarah, Hagar, and Abraham. Like, can you feel the tension? Can you feel that this is not going to go well? And we still have this promise out here. What's happening? So we have huge relational problems, because Sarah decides that she can just give Hagar, who had no power, to Abram. But then when Hagar got pregnant, guess what? She has power. Yes, she does. What power does she have? She's got the baby. And so at that point, you can see now Sarah's like, this is not good. And so she begins to what? Be abusive to Hagar. So much so that Hagar runs away. One of the ways that I'm really interested in reading the scriptures is reading them through the lens of trauma, because I work with trauma and abuse, and I think it's so fascinating that we don't have to go very far to look at stories of trauma. They're right here. And what happens in trauma, the trauma response, if you're familiar, it comes from the primitive part of our brain. When we are traumatized, there's fight or flight. And if you can't fight and you can't leave, something else you can do. Does anybody know? Freeze. Yes. Fight, flight, freeze. So Sarah is abusing Hagar. What does Hagar do? She flees. She runs. She runs to the desert. So she gets to the desert. She basically thinks she's, you know, dead, because you have to know that the desert that they're from is not like a forgiving place. And God sees her there. And I think it's, you know, I think it's such a powerful thing. He asks her two questions. God asks Hagar two questions. And there are questions that God, I think, can ask us every day. Remember the questions? Where are you going? He says to her, where have you come from and where are you going? Where have you come from and where are you going? Now, is that not mysterious? Because God knew exactly where she had come from and exactly where she was going. But he sees her and he knows her and he's bringing that to her. And she is saying, I'm running away from my abusive mistress. And in a really, really mysterious way, God says, go back. Can you see that these stories are really complex? You know, what is God asking her to do? Go back into this abusive situation? That he's saying that he's going to take care of her, that it's going to be okay? He's asking a lot of Hagar. But here's what Hagar turns around and does. She turns around and she names God and she says, you are the God who sees. So here you have this Egyptian woman naming the God of Abraham. It's a really beautiful reversal. Okay, so she goes back and God and Abraham are still kind of talking about it. Like, we still don't know how this is working out. There's still no child. They think it's Ishmael, but God keeps saying, no, there's going to be a son, and it's going to be from Isaac. It's going to be from Sarah, and the child is going to be Isaac. So I just want to have us just stop for a minute to think, what would it be like? What would it be like to wait for decades? What would it be like to have these like really tense relationships? And what would it like to wonder, be like to wonder if God is really going to do what he says he's going to do? Do you ever wonder that in your own life? Does God see me? Has he forgotten me? Is he really going to do what I hope he does? Well, I think we can learn something from both Sarah and Hagar. We can see that God came to both Sarah and Hagar. And this is what's so fascinating to me. Every time I read these stories, and I've read them a lot, I see something different. And what I saw this time is God did not protect either Sarah or Hagar from the abuses with each other. I mean, if we go back, if we had more time, I would tell you the story of Abraham and what he did to Sarah, putting her in utter harm's way twice. But we'll narrow our scope. But you know, God is a God of mystery and complexity. And he doesn't necessarily protect us from things that we wish he would, but he does sustain us. And he sustains Sarah and Hagar, albeit in a really circuitous way. So what I want you to see is that what Sarah went through, what it would be like for her to have gone through what she went through and to be waiting and waiting and not see how she, how so much was required of her, and yet she wasn't a perfect person. She was abusive to Hagar, and I read this story so many times before I actually was willing to engage with that reality, because I didn't want to, it's like, no, this is Sarah, this is, you know, the father and mother of our faith, and they can't be doing abusive things, and yet, here it is. But what I'm coming to is that there's no perfect people in the Bible, except for one, which we will get to. But there's humanity, and it's in humanity that God comes, and God is makes himself known. And we see Sarah change, we see her grow. So, as I said before, the characters are not all good and all bad. They're complex, and we have to read them that way, just as we have to read ourselves in our own stories. Not good and bad, but complex and mixed. Okay, so Sarah was a real woman. She was incredibly beautiful. She lived a really long life, very difficult circumstances, and she did give birth to this child, Isaac, who at first she didn't believe that it was even going to happen. She laughed, and that's why when she named Isaac Laughter, it was sort of this really beautiful coming together. But at the end, in Hebrews, Sarah is one of two women. It says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful, who had promised. So Sarah became a woman of faith, even though she struggled. And Hagar was the one who named God as the God of seeing. Nobody else in the entire Bible named God except for Hagar. So this incredible place of honor for Hagar. And Hagar, I really think, foreshadows Jesus. She anticipates him because Jesus, the perfect one, was rejected. Hagar was rejected, was abused. Hagar was abused. Obeyed God, and Hagar obeyed God. She was abandoned, she endured, but all of this is highlighting how these two women who were at odds with each other, God was for them both. And even though their sons were at odds with each other, God was for them both. So I just want to say that harm is a gift that points us to the necessity of forgiveness and the promise of reconciliation. Harm reveals the finality of the cross and the utter open possibilities of the resurrection. So even though at this time we don't know about the resurrection, it's foreshadowing ahead. Even in this harm, there's going to be a day where it's going to be all made right. So this is my mentor, Dan Allender, a quote from him, when he says this: all harm is a gift that points us to the necessity of forgiveness and the promise of reconciliation. Harm reveals the finality of the cross and the utter open possibilities of the resurrection. Bless your enemies. Bless your enemies, for they have delivered you to the cross more often and with greater necessity than your friends. So sometimes the things that we think are going to be the worst thing for us are what God is going to use to bring us right to himself and show himself to do something amazing. So where are you tonight? Are you someone waiting like Sarah, like one of my clients who is also infertile? She's been waiting to have a child, and it's not happening. And one of the most painful places for her to go is, guess where? Church. So painful. Or you like another one of my clients who, in a really mysterious twist, got fired and humiliated from a job that she was doing awesome with. And no one could figure out why. And she came in and she said, I'm humiliated. I'm so ashamed. I've just been fired. I've never been fired in my life. And she's wondering, God, what in the world are you doing? Do you have anything for me? What is the next thing? What are you waiting for? Where do you need God to show up? Where are you hoping God is seeing you, the God who sees? Sarah became this woman of faith. Hagar became a woman who named God. My question to you tonight is, what are you waiting for? Where do you want God to come? God is a mysterious God who is near, and he's near to us even more in distress. And he always initiates in love. So as we go through the rest of these stories, we're going to see this constant theme of abundance and love. Do you see the abundance even? Abraham was like, well, there's just one son. And God's like, no, there's going to be two. And there's going to be nations and lots and lots. And you're not even going to be able to count how many descendants you have. God of abundance. So over any meal, you can talk with each other about what you're waiting for. And maybe even talk with God about what you're waiting for. Think about yourself to say, I don't know what I'm waiting for. I gotta think about that myself. I'm gonna end with a prayer now, and it's in the back of your book. I'll say a little bit more, but I enclosed a bunch of poems because I love poetry, and I just thought, why not? But this is a poem, but it's a prayer. Our Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself, and the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I'm doing. I hope that I'll never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, will I trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone.